The SparkFile podcast may contain profanity and other adult content.
Please use your discretion.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my SparkFile.
SparkFile.
To be something that I want to make or how I want to be, I pump it in my SparkFile.
SparkFile.
I jump into my SparkFile. Let's open up the SparkFile.
Welcome to the SparkFile, your one-stop comic shop for creative inspiration.
I'm Laura Camion.
And I'm Susan Blackwell. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome. You may be asking yourself, what exactly is a SparkFile? Where do I get one? What do I file in it? These are legitimate questions, and we've got answers.
Yes, we do. A SparkFile is a place where you consistently collect all of those inspirations and fascinations. And if you're like us, and you're making stuff all the time, you already know that sometimes the wellspring of inspiration can run a little dry. We're here to refill it.
We are on the lookout for fresh ideas, images, and inspiration that spark our creativity and pique our curiosity. Things that inspire us to get up off of our asses and make things like this very podcast.
Or a YouTube video series that imagines the wisdom and wonder that a child might bring to the presidency.
Or stories and drawings that cultivate empathy and imagination in kids and former kids.
Or a book that helps us all remember how to fly. On today's Makersode, we're going to talk to someone who truly sparks us.
And that special someone is Brad Montague. Brad Montague, welcome to
the SparkFile.
Whoa, me?
You.
Yes, you. I was just here to watch the podcast. I didn't know I was going to be on it. I'm being pulled from the audience right now.
You're in it now.
You're in it.
You're in the thick of
it. No, you're not quite yet in it because first you have to pay the toll to the troll under the bridge, and that's me. This is the SparkFile prize of admission. Real quick, you have to tell us a creative risk that you have taken recently, or maybe it's one you're about to take. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll tell you, I am trying and have been trying to be in the habit of it always being a risk.
I love it.
Because for a long time, I tried to get everything perfect. And the more you're like, you know what? The scribble's perfect. Like, let's just, it's the idea of the thing. Let's just have fun. Let's make a mess. But that's a little different when you're doing something. That's like art. And a video is fine to have a few edits, but we're in the midst of a live event that we're about to do.
We're here at Story Gathering in Nashville, Tennessee.
Sharing a talk. Yeah, usually you want this to be polished.
You're closing out the conference.
That's right. That's no small thing.
You know, you put it that
big
way.
Big finale is what we might call it.
Put the pressure on it.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking, you know, you close out a conference, like it needs to be... you're tying the bow on the whole thing.
That's right.
It's the thing they could remember for better or worse.
It's a kiss goodnight, baby.
And that's right.
That's right. Make it a good one.
So I'm going to start the talk by saying I wanted this to be a big deal. I wanted to close it out big with confetti and a choir and a t-shirt cannon, but you love me as I am. I'm just going to tell you a story. But then at the end, there's confetti, a choir, and a t-shirt cannon.
Dreams do come true.
So right now, as we're doing this, there is a charter bus full of children and elderly people from my hometown 2 hours away that are on the way here. They've been rehearsing. I've got my t-shirt cannon. We're ready.
Oh, you're doing it all.
But will it work?
But will it work?
We'll see.
We'll be the judges of that.
And this is what I'm thinking, though, and that's always, if it works, then that's going to be, it's going to really work. If it doesn't, the idea is still good. It's still going to be fun.
That's right.
I put my money on, it's going to blow people's butts off.
I think so too.
That's what I'm putting my money on that. Yeah. But it is still, we were talking before we started recording, and there is still something about like, will the t-shirt cannon go off?
Sure.
Will I accidentally kill 12 people with the t-shirt cannon? Like, there are risks.
That's right.
Will the pyro set the choir on fire?
We don't know, but that's the thrill of live performance.
It is. I'm excited for you.
I like it. I'm excited about
it.
I'm ready.
I like it. Welcome.
Welcome. I would say you are admitted officially into the SparkFile. Brad, for people who don't know you, can you tell us, two-parter, One, how do you identify creatively? And then maybe describe your work a little bit. For those who don't know, the magic of Brad Montague.
There's lots of ways I want to describe myself.
Okay.
As a writer, director.
Yeah.
As,
yeah.
You know, all those things.
Yes.
But being real, I'm just a human being who wants to be loved.
Oh.
I'm just trying to make things.
I feel you.
So at the heart
please
of
like
your
me.
Work.
It's really, oh. No, it's sad. It's sad.
But you no. do this beautiful thing.
Please
you
like
have
me.
Made these stickers.
Yeah.
You know your stickers yeah. that say, what do your stickers say?
I'm just a human being who wants to be loved.
And then you can take these stickers. I'm yes. just a human being who wants to be loved. I think I saw them on Instagram. You had them applied to a photo of like Kim Kardashian mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and her husband Kanye, and I was like yeah. it was such an amazing reminder about every person
yes.
and I'm gonna say every soul, every being, every puppy.
You can do it to the front. I did like, it to the front page of the New York Times. I would graffiti it with all the stickers. You can put them on your TV, like whatever comes yes. up. It always is applicable.
Yeah.
And so really everything
and,
you're
and
making.
Angela yeah. Merkel, I'm just a person yeah, who yeah. wants to be loved. I yeah. thought it was, it's so,
genius.
This is the genius of Brad Montague. Just that taking a concept like that and distilling it down into a sticker, which is fun.
Yeah.
And there's yep. something about that distillation that illuminates like a whole concept.
It's the great equalizer. It's such a reminder, A, who I am and what I am, someone who wants to be loved.
Yeah.
And then reflecting on how I may have judged another person as I'm looking at them and realizing they are just a human being who wants to be loved. It's such a magic. It's in its simplicity
Brad.
And its truth and vulnerability. It is perfection.
So you identify creatively as a person who wants to be loved.
Who wants to be loved.
And you know, I'm trying to let that guide me in a healthy way. Because yeah. there's the unhealthy way
oh,
of like,
yeah.
oh, please
yeah.
like me, please like me.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to notice when it's that or when it's
and
coming
what's the healthy way?
From love.
Right.
If oh. the things I'm making are coming from love. So like I discovered, you know, I spent my whole life trying to do things to get stickers.
Like you I don't blame
as
you.
A kid,
the reward
like,
is in your hands
you know
now.
What? You're going to get this shot. And you get a sticker.
You're gonna get a sticker.
Oh, game on! Like I'll do it.
If you in the summer reading book
oh, yeah.
club at the library,
I will read those books
to get those stickers.
Give me stickers.
Attendance.
Well, then I found out you can yes. just buy stickers.
What?
Yeah, you can make your own. It's a thing.
Yeah.
And so now it's been dangerous because I realized you could just make stickers now, and then I'm starting to think, okay, well, am I going to do things for stickers, or am I going to actually like? Give stickers.
Yes. Yes.
It's my currency.
I think Brad in a life well lived, mm-hmm. a little bit of both.
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
Hey, I just yeah. want to point out though, I'm intrigued by this concept of, you know, just being careful about pursuing that love. But isn't there a question in there inherent to that is how we define love?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's love and then there is the adulation that can sometimes motivate. How do you grapple with the difference in that?
There's been so many times where I've judged success of something based on the response,
mm-hmm.
Based on how many people mm-hmm. applauded, how loud they applauded, how much yep. media it got, all of that.
Yeah.
And then realizing that the real success comes from you creating something out of love as a gift
yeah.
to people and them receiving it with that same love. And when
that
I started doing
shit.
That, mm-hmm. it changed everything.
Mm.
Things started to click in a way where it wasn't just, hey, I like that thing you made, or, oh, this is really cool. And
yeah.
it became a true connection
a
between
deeper
people.
Yeah. Engagement.
I want to apologize for tearing up so early in the interview.
Here's a prediction. Here's a hot take. By the end of this interview, how much, Brad, let's place a wager.
All right.
How many times do you think Cammie is going to cry?
All right. So the wager involves stickers. We're going to get stickers
yeah.
from this.
I would like a sticker yeah. every time I cry. Okay.
You deserve a sticker.
I just love
right.
it.
I have
it's
to tell
beautiful.
You, it's become actually, I feel like I've done a good job or I've done my work well when, Cammy and Cry's happy tears.
Oh. They're happy tears.
I love it.
I just love when we get Cammy's, to talk to someone.
Cammy's tears are my sticker. I just realized it.
Sticker tears. I just feel so grateful to be able to have these kinds of conversations with people who are working and speaking truth. That's what gets me. When you said that, I was like, that is the truth. And it just like... out of me.
He pressed your sponge.
Totally pressed my sponge.
To be even more direct, I think that there's something about talking to you, Brad, mm-hmm. because we both admire your work so yes. much, and we do feel like it speaks straight from your heart to our heart. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I think that also may be the reason why.
couple extra tears for that.
Turn on the waterworks, Cam.
Grateful for your tears.
Tell us more about the work that you do, the things that yep. you have made.
Yep.
So I have created a web series called Kid President that came out of we'd been working with junior high and high school students, and I'd been seeing all the ways that they were just doing stuff. Everybody else would complain, and kids are like, I'm going to start a sock drive for the homeless. I'm going to send a bunch of glasses to people. I'm going to, like, not glass.
Yeah.
Glasses.
Bags of broken glass.
Bags of glass.
So helpful. Teenagers are complicated.
But they would, we're normally, and in the midst of, I would be surrounded with all these kids and these projects and all this hope. And then I would go to Grown Up Planet and see there was just a complaining about the things. Mm. And these kids were, without prompting, were doing the things. Mm. And so to bridge that gap, it's kind of like, well, let's just have a kid speak directly and say, hey, listen to me. Listen up. And that became, it was like sort of a joke, but it was very heartfelt. And it balanced that silly and serious. And they just were like 2-minute things I was putting out. Just listen to a kid for 2 minutes. And here's what they have to say. So my little brother-in-law, he lives across the street from me. Put him in his Easter suit and put him behind a desk and just started putting them out.
I've also heard you say it was a way for you to spend time together.
Yes.
You were looking for a way to spend time together. Yes. So there was a spark of inspiration in that as well.
Absolutely. Because I was working lots of jobs at that time that were more corporate, more like marketing. I was the guy with the camera that would edit and make videos. Mm-hmm. We were putting on events and it was a fun creative time, but it wasn't the expressions that they weren't from me. I worked in a newsroom for a long time. I would have a camera.
I'm trying to, in the same way that when I say to tell people I worked in corporate for 20 years and they're like, huh? How was that?
No, that's a great clip. I need to find it. It's on VHS. We have it. It's one of those interruptions that come up on the news, like coming up on 5 o'clock. Yeah. When they're in the newsroom, you see the people working. So there's the newscaster, and then I walk by looking at the camera just so awkwardly, like, hey, they walk by.
Well done.
I was just, please, hey.
I'm just a person who wants to be loved.
I know there's news, but can we just hug?
Yeah.
But what was hard with news and all of that is you'd show up with people on their absolute worst day. And you document it. I remember, there's a news package I was really proud of. I got great camera angles of this car wreck. And it just in the moment, I was like, oh yeah, here, this. Never talked to the people that were involved. Never any of that. Just, hey, get the intersection there. Get the shot.
Yeah.
And when it ran on the news, I remember thinking, oh no. I just documented somebody's worst day.
Yeah. And I'm doing that every day.
Broadcasted it. To everybody.
Yeah.
I never talked to them. Never. And it was like, okay, I don't want to do that.
For a sensitive soul, it seems like that might be one of the most painful places to be, because that industry is just cranking out the bad news.
And there's people within that aren't about that machine. Mm-hmm. And then yet there is that truth of, well, this is the most interesting thing, because good things are always happening, but there's that one bad thing. Let's let everybody know, because that's the anomaly. That's the interesting. Yeah. And to flip that, it becomes, okay, well, how can we talk about the things we don't always talk about, that really important thing about each other, about kids that are doing beautiful things? And how do we do that in a way that actually breaks the cycle and then realize, and come awake. Oh, there's kids that are doing beautiful things.
Before we get too far away from it, I just want to encourage everybody listening to this podcast to just throw into your spark file, Kid President. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen it yet or haven't seen it in a while, put that in your spark file and go give that a visit. It yeah. is a treat. It's fantastic. Thanks. And you said that it's like, do you feel like that is the thing that you're best known for?
Yeah, usually people don't know that there was a person writing or making them. They think appeared. This like unicorn child appeared
like
and started making the videos.
Art does.
No,
just
all
arrives.
Children are amazing and all that, but I think but
that's sophisticated content.
but I have been somewhat hidden in the backgrounds of everything, hiding. Everything I've made, I had some proxy deliver the message. Mm-hmm. Everything from, oh, here's a dog that's really wise. I started for a long time. I'd have a poem I wanted to share. I'm like, hey, this dog wrote this.
That dog's amazing.
So if you don't like it, talk to the dog.
Listen to advice, dog. Even right now, I posted a thing that drew this little guardian angel. And had where he has a help desk and he'll answer your questions.
Yeah.
And so I set up a toll-free number where people can call. But they're not talking to me, but they are me. They're talking to me. But they refer to this little angel. They're like, hey, little angel, I got a question. And
oh, my God.
And I'm going, why can't I just say, hey, will you call me? I'm going to ask. But then there's a certain playfulness to hiding in all of it. And
when you describe it, though, as hiding, I wonder, so I assume it's all by design. And is there do you crave stepping out from that or continuing to cultivate that? Because I think they're both amazing choices. Like,
or a little bit of all of it. Yeah.
There's a tension between wanting to interact and connect directly. And then another of wanting just them to play with the work itself, them just to experience the pureness of that.
Yeah.
There's a moment, I think we may have talked about this at some point. We created this project in our neighborhood called Socktober. It's like, okay, how do we take care of our neighbors who are homeless when they're preparing for cold weather? So it was just a simple thing. Socks are one of the least donated, most needed items. We started a drive. And then it's grown over the years. This is the 10th year. So every year there's like drives in different parts of the country, the world, even every continent. There's Socktober drives. I was on an airplane and this man's like, so what do you do? And I was like, I make silly YouTube videos. And then he said, oh, that's really neat. They're about kids and grown-ups working together to make the world a better place. And we sat there and he's like, okay, that's great. And then he goes, hey, you might be interested in what my girls are doing. They did this project at their school. They call it Socktober. And he's like, when I went to the shelter with them, and he starts showing me pictures.
Oh my.
And I'm there just wanting to scream, I did that. That was my idea. That was all me. But instead, I just was so sideswiped and so moved. And like, you know, I'm in the sky.
Did you burst into tears and was the guy like, hey, buddy. Hey, hey, big fella.
I sat there with my hands, like sitting on my hands, just shaking. And I was like, he probably thought, this man's insane.
Just rocking in your seat.
I just went, that's a really good idea.
Oh my God.
You know, because I'm in the sky by a stranger.
Yeah.
He shows me a picture on the phone and you're going,
that's amazing.
So does it matter that I get the credit or does it just matter that it happened?
Mm-hmm.
When I go to pitch shows, I suddenly start thinking, I wish that they knew.
Wait, are you like,
that I could, you know, I wish that they realized that I've done other things that they...
I thought you were going to say, when you pitch shows, you wish you could send in a wise dog in your place to pitch for you.
If only...
There is something magical to the person owning the story of Socktober, owning the story of your creative work. Slightly different because I didn't create Blue Man Group, but I worked with them for 20 years. And as their PR person, all the stories in the world were, you know, started somewhere on my desk. And when I would meet people, it'd be fascinating. And they say, where do you work for Blue Man Group? And they're like, oh, They have shows all over the world. Did you know that? And did you know they started in Chicago? And I'm like, well, they didn't. But tell me more about it. Tell me more. Tell me more. And I would have those moments too of like, you know what? I don't need to tell them. I want to hear like, what is their experience of it?
Yes.
So they would tell me entire stories about the origin of the company that I worked for and the work that we do.
Yeah, I have people tell me all the time about like, oh, you know, Robbie, the kid who plays kid president. He just like, oh, really? Oh, nice.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah.
No.
And Liz Gilbert talked about this one time where she said, you know, people all the time assume Eat, Pray, Love's her only book or that was the first book she wrote. Yeah. And she said something that has helped me a lot. She's like, they're not experts in me. That's not their job.
Yeah, that's right.
That's not their job.
Can you take us back and tell us when you first knew in your bones that you were creative, that you were a creative person? And follow up, when did you know that you were going to make creativity a career?
Mm-hmm. So fourth grade, I had a teacher who got me.
Who was that teacher?
Debbie Perkins.
Oh, Debbie Perkins.
I got to see her last spring again.
I miss Perkins.
She's amazing. I would finish tests early so I could draw on the back. Aww. And she understood that there was something to that instead of just like saying, hey, cut
quit
that out. Hey,
doodling on the back of
the test. She would like comment on the stories and the stuff itself and be like, oh,
so
that's
so she would grade the test and also.
Yeah. And then she'd be like, hey, would you like to? I remember I had one that was actually a comic about a bird and she taped it up to the board. And it's like, this is, look at what Brad did.
How neat.
And I was like,
that's my first gallery show.
Well, then there was a school newspaper. This is a small town, so the school was kindergarten through 12th grade. Like it's a little bitty town, a little bitty school, and there was a high school. A bunch of high schoolers ran the school newspaper, and she was like, "You should put some of these in the newspaper." And I'm like, "Oh no,
you were so little.
You were like a New Yorker cartoonist at fourth grade.
I couldn't possibly."
Oh my god!
And so she starts, you know, sharing that stuff and letting me present them, and. It was like one of the, I don't know that it was the first time, but it must have been because I remember it so distinctly, her eyes looking into my eyes saying like, you are an artist.
And wow. And her reflection of you, you were like, I am creative.
Yeah, she even helped me pack up a lot of my drawings and stories to send to Walt Disney Feature Animation, which is just... Who does that? Oh. And she herself is like more of an athlete. She played soft. Like she was, and I thought going into her class, oh, she's not going to like me. I'm not an athletic kid. I'm an indoorsy drawer. And instead, she was fascinated by it. And other teachers just tolerated it. And she celebrated that. And I've found out she did that with other kids too. It was not just me. It
please.
Was just, that's why I've fallen in love with teachers. Teachers
that's
like,
right.
That's what they do.
Yeah, that's right.
They give do that make every kid
Perkins.
Feel that way.
And please tell me the name of your next book or perhaps your autobiography is Indoorsy Drawer.
Indoorsy Drawer.
Pale Indoorsy Drawer.
And when did you know you were going to make it into a career?
Honestly say I've always wanted to, mm-hmm. always wanted to, but didn't think it was possible. Mm-hmm. So news was close enough.
Oh,
and then when it was not the stories I wanted to tell, I was like, I can't, this is not.
You busted out like a Kool-Aid man?
Yeah. I've got to do something else.
How did you make that leap? Because I just had this resonance and realizing a good number of our listeners are probably right there mm-hmm. in that moment thinking, I wish I could, I don't think I can, or I'm close enough and I can't ask for more. Mm-hmm. How did you make that leap?
It took for me, like how Robert Frost talks about the poems are lumps in the throat. They begin as like a lump in the throat.
Does Robert Frost say that?
All the time. Every time you see him, that's what he says. God. He's Rob. Yeah. Rob. Actually, he's not alive. I never met him.
You're calling him Rob.
Rob.
Like your homies.
Yeah.
But poems start as lumps in the throat.
As lumps in the throat.
This thing, this pain that you got to share or else.
Yeah.
And I am deeply insecure. And yet somehow the need to share things got so strong that I had to do it.
It trumped your insecurity.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
And not that these were like things that were traumatic experiences I need to share, which those are real. It was like there was this joy, this like in this environment I wanted to live in, this mm-hmm. space I wanted, these colors I wanted the world to see, these songs, like this feeling I wanted people to feel mm-hmm. I wanted in my life.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I know that okay, I'll work from 9 to 5 and do that, but when I get home and on the weekend we're gonna like make something mm-hmm. ridiculous.
Yes.
Get our friends together, make something dumb. Let's do this.
Was there a long time where you're sort of like, I'm too timing it. I'll work that salaried position. And then evenings, weekends are mine. That's making time. And then did an inversion occur?
For a very long time, that's what it was.
Yes.
It was this like, and some people call it like a side hustle, mm-hmm. right? But it was really just more of an extension of, okay, I'm finally doing the things I love. Like I'm creating this atmosphere that I want to live in. And it overtook everything because we had this video go viral. We had, and we had done maybe 20 videos at that point online. And I thought that's the biggest success it's ever going to get. And then I did what I thought was going to be the last one. It's this pep talk. It's going to just be like kind of the closer. And instead, that became the beginning.
Wow.
I relate deeply to this. And I think I speak for Baby Cams. I feel like you do as well. There was a long decades where I was, you know, corporate by day, creating on evenings and weekends. And there were days where I was corporate by day, performing on Broadway by night. I mean, it took me a long time mm-hmm. for that inversion to occur. And I will say this, it makes this chapter of life where it is kind of all creative all the time so sweet. And I do not take it for granted.
No, absolutely. I felt like suddenly I became plucked out of that.
Yeah.
And in moments where I thought that's the end of the story, we're done, there were people who had resonated with work we had created who are scooping me up constantly going, no, 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 this matters. We still need you out here. We still need you on the field. Come on, keep making stuff.
Get in the arena.
There was a big point where I thought, okay, like I'm done. And then it was a bunch of elementary school teachers that started going like, hey, what you do is a big deal to my students. It matters. Will you talk to our students? Will you come do this thing? So I started writing stories that could be shared in classrooms and started doing that. And finding this whole other way to do what it suddenly came so natural. And it was...
Was the public speaking comfortable?
At first it was not. And then it became thinking of... At first public speaking was not comfortable because I thought I have to give a talk.
Yeah.
Just like everybody else's talk. Yeah. There are all these people that are talking and
what if I
charts.
Told you that there's a way? Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So I actually, one of my early jobs was being a motivational speaker for a website called monster.com.
I remember Monster.
Yeah. Yes.
So they had this program where you could, they would train you and then you would go to schools. And I don't know what it was, but I felt like this is out. It felt like this will be some way to grow, express, to do something. And they had the script and they threatened you, you know, if you go off script, there are people in the audience that are spies, like they're going to report this back to you.
It sounds great.
And so I then start traveling, I'm reading these scripts, and it wouldn't work. And then I would go off a bit, and then that's when it would connect.
Yeah.
And I learned a huge lesson in owning what I needed to say instead of taking the thing that was handed to me.
Yeah.
So when it came to speaking, it's like, okay, I'm not going to do a talk. I'm going to do my talk.
God, you're killing me.
There's so much.
I do. I relate to that deeply as well. Just that desire as an interpretive. I was an interpretive artist for so long, and I feel like my true joy and engagement has come. This isn't for everybody, but if it is knocking on your door, the joy of engaging with people with things that come from within you is, it's sort of like next level to me.
Mm-hmm. It is. Something and like the belief behind that, that your voice and that your words have as much significance, importance, need to be in the world as the script that you're handed.
As that monster.com
script. As that monster.com script.
I'm sure it was wonderful. And I mean this sincerely. Yeah. Whoever crafted that,
I still remember part of it. There's actually a good part at the beginning. It's like all successful people have two things in common.
That's what I'm talking about. I would pay you $1 million to just bail on what you're going to do at Story this afternoon and do your monster.com
and
script.
And then end with the t-shirt cannon choir. And
it'll get you there.
People would be like, clap, clap. Clap.
But those t-shirts were great.
Great t-shirts.
Your work is so full of joy and love. Where does that come from?
That's a good question. I recently have been on a quest of sorts to figure out what is the kind of grown-up I want to be. It's the kind of adult I want to be. And for a long time, I had a list of what I didn't want, of how not to do it.
Got it.
Of that looks depressing. That looks dark. Mm-hmm. That looks like you have a lot of regret. Is there a way to walk through this brighter? Mm. So I first started spending time with kids, and kids are what gave me life. Yep. So spending time with junior high school kids, like with their service learning projects, and we started a camp. And then I started interviewing third, fourth, and fifth graders and asking them at the end, how can I be a better grown-up? And they would literally tell me. I would show up with like tape over my mouth and be like, I'm not going to talk. I have a grown up that you can just talk to. And they would tell me about, well, you should do what you say you're going to do.
What kinds of things would you hear?
Well, sometimes they'd be silly and be like, oh, you should not wear that shirt. Or you should do whatever. Because then they're like, seeing if I'll really take it. And then I'm like, okay, well, yeah. And then they would then open up more and say things like, you should actually show up when you say you're gonna like do something.
So keep your word.
They would say things about you should do things with us. A whole lot of that was a theme. Playing, they would talk about that. Even as old as like fifth grade, they would use words, even that language. And that kind of became more of, oh, well, here's what's not. Sometimes they would tell me about somebody great in their life, like a grandmother. But I was kind of feeling like, well, so then I started interviewing people over the age of 100. And that, I can't tell you how much that shifted everything. Because I suddenly had an image of a North Star of, I want to be like him.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I want to have the eyes full of wonder.
May I ask, what questions were you asking and what answers were you receiving?
I would first ask them, I'd say, look, I am a dad. I have a 4-year-old, 6-year-old. I don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And you have grown up.
Yeah.
How did you do it? Like, what's your family like? Mm-hmm. Do you have any regrets? How can I get to the point you're at now and be at peace, be happy? And what I found was that the people who were willing to talk with me or bring me in had a lightness about them that was just like the fourth graders. That somehow, whether they'd been through junk and then they forgot it and let it go, or they held on to that, but they became more childlike at the end. and were in this space of just gratitude and awe. And so it was, that was the massive theme at the end there as I'm spending time with them, was this whole way of even, like, one lady was 103, done incredible things in her life. She spent the whole time just grabbing my arm, grabbing my leg, just being like,
that's my girl. That's my girl.
We're here. She go, wow, we're here. And then she kept saying, now, where'd you grow up? I grew up in New York. And here we are, right here, right now. Like, this doesn't make sense. Just constantly, whoa, wow.
Wonder. We're here. Awe. Yeah.
And I want that.
Brett, did you take all of these sparks that you were harvesting from fourth graders and under and 100 and over? Have you made something out of that?
It started as, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what this is, but it's helping me. Like, yeah. I think this is therapy. This is some form of something. I began recording them, doing drawings afterwards, like this whole piece. And then it ended up taking shape into a book. And the book's called Becoming Better Grownups. and it's about what I learned from kids and former kids about how to actually do
it's
this life thing.
It's on the brink of being available, right? It's not available just yet. Is it around the brink of launching?
The album drops April 7th.
Yes. April 7th?
Yes.
2020?
That's right. I'm trying to see, this is what I'm trying to do. A lot of people release books, but like, I think we only get excited about albums dropping.
So you're going to drop books.
My book's dropping. It's like a mixtape. I should release a mixtape with the book.
I'm feeling a synergistic marketing campaign where you bundle, let's say, 100 books and just drop them literally on major cities.
Yeah.
I don't foresee a lawsuit.
No. No problem with that.
Yeah. Good. $1 million sparks.
Yeah. Excellent.
One of my favorite illustrations of yours, Brad, is this beauty. It's a Spider-Man mask. It has little flowers around it and a little caption around it. And it says, no rain, no showers, no spider bite, no spider powers. And we've even discussed it on the podcast. And it was the title of one of my sparks. Mm. And the spark is a dark spark. It's a spark about people coming back from trauma and healing and doing it in a way that is kind of mind-blowing. But I feel like that, I kept coming back to that quote, no rain, no showers, no spider bite, no spider powers. And it just like rocked my pants. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us, what spider bites have you gotten and what powers did they give you?
I feel like a lot of the people that I respect and that I see that have that exuberance, that joy, that lightness of moving through the world. When you really start talking to them, you realize that they're on the other side of something.
I feel that way.
Heavy. And then you just suddenly, you're like, what? This makes less sense now.
Give me a sticker. I'm crying. I feel that way. Yeah.
And it helped me understand that all those moments when I feel like I don't belong at the table, or I feel like I'm not enough, I feel like I'm not, any sort of hurts that have piled up over the years, little paper cuts that have turned into deep wounds, there can be a creative response to anything destructive if it's in the right hands. And I think everybody has that ability. Every person, no matter what, like, junk, we have this ability to transform that into something beautiful in spite of it. And so for me, it's always been saying, okay, this is going to be, my life is going to be a joyful rebellion against what is to create what could be. And in the midst of any sort of melancholy, any depression, any anxiety, any of that, I'm not going to hide it. I'm not going to tuck it away. I'm going to march through it.
Yeah.
And because I know on the other side, I'm somehow going to be brighter if I really lean into it.
I love it. I really do believe in this life. This life that is sometimes awesome and sometimes nawsome, which is the opposite of awesome.
I feel you.
Here we are living this life with those nawsome parts. If we have to live through them, at least maybe we get to make something out of it. That's maybe right. Something that's beautiful, maybe something that's funny, maybe something that's of service to the world. Mm-hmm. Again, I feel like one of your superpowers, Brad, is your ability to take a great, big, complex concept like that and then just distill it into this beautiful image or this beautiful couplet. Mm. You know?
That's right.
I feel like you're magic. I feel like quit kicking Laura Cameo. Like,
I know.
I got excited.
Brad just kicked Laura.
I got a compliment. I can't accept compliments. So I just kick.
You have to take
it.
Brad, you have to take it.
You have to.
That's one thing that writing a book was a bit of a challenge because I get excited about the economy of words, about like really
it is,
bringing it down to a few words.
Yes.
And they're going, no, this is 60,000 words. I'm like, but I got 10 here that are really
powerful, succinct, and truthful.
I do think it's one of your superpowers is that economy of words. And as somebody who can just talk. I admire it so greatly. Susan, shut up.
I love every word that comes out of your mouth.
Do you?
I do. On a related topic, we're obsessed, I'd say on this podcast and off this podcast. Sure. We're obsessed with the idea of how people process what they perceive as a failure. Mm-hmm. And we've noticed themes of like it can, you know, shut you down or it can motivate you further or end all of your creativity. Where do you land in that? What do you do? Do you have something that you perceived as like, ooh, that was a belly flop? What did you do afterwards?
Yes, I have long series of those. Like, that's the thing is that, you know, you suddenly start having work that people see and they're like, oh great job, this guy. Oh, and they're like, you're so lucky. Here you go. Like people. And then there's friends who've seen me like through the years make a dunce of myself over and over. And they're like, oh, finally, like that actually made sense. That thing he did actually.
Can you tell us one of those times where you're just like, that was embarrassing. My friends called me out on it.
So I hosted a no budget talk show that aired on local television and it was in a bagel shop while they're having business.
Okay. Business hours.
So people will come in and he's running the coffee grinder while I'm interviewing our mayor. There's a lady who comes and I thought, you know, I'd seen Letterman have dogs. And so I was like, there's a lady I knew who had a bunch of dogs. So she's not like the Humane Society or anything. She just liked dogs. So I had
it's
dogs
a dog
on the show.
Hoarder.
Yeah. They had the section
bring him to
dogs.
The bagel shop.
It's realism.
I was like, let's just put on a show. Like, it's like Kermit and the Muppets, you know? Uh-huh. Let's just do a show, guys, and get all my friends together. And I thought, this is really fun. And then I would see it on TV and go, oh, no.
I did that.
That's me.
How do you process when you see that and you say, oh, no? How does Brad Montague process creative imperfections or failures?
Well, I think then beyond that, there have been so many moments where I have misfired, where you think this is going to communicate exactly what I need to. This is the thing. This
will get them.
And either nobody pays attention, nobody sees it, or you spend like a year and a half working in development on a TV show that for no reason at all
doesn't materialize.
Just wisps, it's gone. Mm-hmm. And that was so hard because after having a series of successes and then going, oh, I got this next thing. I'm so excited. It is leveling up. Like this thing is even better. Spend a year and a half. Everybody's asking, what are you doing? Oh, I'm working on this show. It's going to be great. Mm. And then woof, gone.
Yeah.
And all the work, everything you did will never be seen or shared. It will never, it will never exist. And so then I'm sitting there going, did I waste all my time? Is that, am I done? Am I gone? Like, and all of those moments, you think that's the end of the story. Remembering that there's, that's not.
That's right.
and it going back to the whole idea of doing things for love or from love, it became a moment of me really searching, going, okay, well, I have a circle of love around me, of friends and family that I should feed and nurture, that should, and then let's just take care of that and let's see what grows from that next. That is not fun.
Do you have to grieve the loss of the shelved project, or?
I should. You should. We all should. No.
Yeah,
I actually have a friend who's
to skip over it.
I think so. I have a friend who his name's Kyle Sheely, and Kyle is an artist who makes things out of cardboard. I love scrappy, love that. And he, you know, he's done this a couple of times, but when he turned 30, he had a big Viking funeral for his 20s and he burned a giant ship. And he's doing a thing right now where people can have sent him, he has them write down a little card, their regrets, their all that stuff. And he rented a warehouse to build a giant Viking ship with dragons on it.
Cardboard.
And it's going to light the baby on fire.
All the regrets will be on board.
Kyle Sheely.
Yeah. It's a big Viking funeral
for the people
we used to be.
Wow. For the people we used to be.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
wonderful. Of all the things you've created thus far, what's the thing that you're proudest of?
Oh, this is so, it's cheesy.
We like
say it.
My kids.
Oh, that's not
that was the
cheesy.
First thing.
It'll be amazing because you're amazing. Your wife, Christy, is amazing. It'd be amazing if your kids were both dicks. That would be amazing. But I bet they're not. I bet they're really great.
I bet they're really great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They are just straight up magic. They are straight up magic. One of the things that, I feel like is a gift that I'm finding and want everybody to have is where you have people who love you around you and you make something and they look at you and go, that's you. That looks like you.
They see you.
Uh-huh.
I love it.
And the people who can say that wasn't you.
I love it.
And recently there have been some folks who can say that sounded like that. That's the guy I know. And I want to be that more.
I love that. Yeah.
I can't help but think about the gift you and your wife are giving your kids in just being so conscious about how can I be a better adult? And I'm sure that encompasses how can I be a better parent as well. That's a gift. That's a gift. I just want to acknowledge that. It's pretty amazing.
Would you be interested in adopting two fully grown women?
We got a lot of life left in us.
Come on,
we got a lot of life. We could really use it.
Come on. We got room. We got room.
Oh my God.
We're Montagues. Is there a creative thing that you know you need to do before you're done?
Oh.
Tell us what it is.
Oh. Is this a question you ask everybody?
This is your life and you're dying.
You know, it's interesting because some have had that reaction to like, ooh, does that mean death is imminent? It's not. It just means like, is there something you'll regret not doing? If you get to 104 and you look back and you're like, damn it, there's that one thing I didn't do.
Yeah, you know, I have been obsessively thinking about this for a long time. So it's not you're not throwing me off. It's just there are so many things that I hope for. I hope that there can be a library of things that I'm proud of. I want to believe, and I do actively feel And I want this for every artist, anybody listening to this, that you have mountains, gobs of great work in you.
Yeah.
And it might be a canvas. It might be like a dance. It might be a video. It may be a film. It may be just, you know, your living room. Yeah. But there's so yeah. much in you. And so my hope is that when it's said and done, there's just like a long pile of, whoa, look at that. It's bright and it's a mess, but it's my mess.
Yeah. and there'll be a big sign over it that says Brad's mess.
Brad's mess. he lived, made things.
Brad Montague, what is it all for?
This is overused. That's because it's true. It's all for love. It's all for that thing that ties us together that's bigger than we can explain or imagine and feel, that thing that unites the people that I know are hearing this that I'll never see, that thing that somehow, that love, it's for that, for us. And the more that we tell stories, the more we create things, it reminds us who we are. It reminds us why we're here. That's what it's for. I love when I saw you perform, I guess it was last year.
At Story, I did a original theater piece, essentially,
yeah.
at Story last year.
And we got to connect afterwards.
That's right. Yes.
But that whole, you performed this piece that was just stunning. But the thing that I feel like great art does is it makes the person receiving it want to live somehow. Oh. Like, want to, like...
Give me another sticker, Brad.
I know. Get the sticker.
But that's
out.
The thing.
But
you
the irony is the whole piece that I was... it was all about end of life. It was all about dying.
And it made you want to live.
And it made you want to live. Made,
like, that... Seeing you share that, seeing you go walk through that pain... For us,
Be the avatar. Be the proxy.
I saw you do that, and I was like, "Oh yeah, okay." That's a gift.
So
I
to take that. It back to my original spark, the spark of Brad Montague for me, Susan Blackwell. This is my voice. I did that piece. I worked very hard on it. I worked for months on it. I took it very seriously because I knew when I performed it at Story, it would be a one-shot deal, shot out of a cannon, shot out of a t-shirt cannon. And I really wanted it. I wanted to feel free and present and grounded when I was telling the story, not just like a hot adrenal cortisol mess. And I was really actively working during the performing to be present to this collective of 1,100 individuals in this beautiful theater. And the face I kept coming back to was the face of a person I did not know yet, Brad Montague.
This face.
And when I met, I ran into you in the lobby, and all I just knew you were this warm, loving face who gave great audience. And I was so, I walked into your arms and I was like, and you were like, your piece. And I was like, let's talk about what a good audience. But that was my initial engagement with you. And I remember it as clearly as I remember the piece of, you know, the piece I put 4 months into. I remember our sort of dance together while I was performing that piece out of 1,100 people.
There we were.
Suck on that, Brad Montague.
And that is what it's all for.
Yeah, that's what it's all for.
Finally, Brad, who or what is sparking you these days?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Okay, so I am just a fan of things. Like, I am a big fan of things. And I love when I see people do things that surprise me, and just there's so many people right now that I'm just like, they're coming alive. They're doing great stuff. So one is it's Julio Torres.
Julio Torres,
the comedian, writer. This guy, he has a show, Los Spookies, on HBO.
Oh, yeah, with Fred Armisen.
Insanely original and his special, my favorite shapes is just doing what delights him, and it makes me so happy to see him happy.
What a good spark.
He is so...
Do you know this person?
No, and I would melt if I saw... He just is so fun. He makes me laugh in ways I didn't know I could. Another thing that makes me laugh too that I love right now that just... So Nancy Comics. Nancy, like the old... Like,
oh, Nancy. Yeah. Nancy Sluggo, spiky hair. Yeah, all the old...
So I didn't realize it's been going on for... They like trade off cartoonists and they give it to people. And this...
Nancy's got legs. She's been going a long time.
So just recently, there's somebody new has taken over, and this woman is just brilliant. She is... hilarious. She is subverting comic form. She's taking this old character and turning her into like what she's always been. And if you go back to read the original comics,
like Nancy's gonna come out.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like seriously, I've been telling people, go read Nancy comics. Like, and what's made me do, you go read the old original ones and they're so weird and surreal. And she's like going, I'm gonna do that. Like the original Let's ones are way back. Ahead of their time.
Brad.
They're so good.
Oh, these are so two great hot sparks.
Yeah.
Hot sparks.
Thank
Love
you.
That. Hot sparks.
Thank you so much to our guest, Brad Montague. Oh,
that's it. We hope this put another gang of sparks in your file. Listen, if there's a spark you'd like us to explore, or if you've taken a spark and fanned it into a creative flame and you'd like to share what you've made, email us at thesparkfile@gmail.com or submit it through our website, thesparkfile.com.
We'll even take your feedback, but you know the price of admission. First, you got to share a creative risk that you've taken recently.
And be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, rate, 5-star review it. If you like this podcast, share it with people you love. If you didn't like it, I want you to take your smartphone you're using to listen. I want you to put it on a floaty and then build a Viking ship out of cardboard. Send it to the center of your above ground pool and set the whole thing on fire. Give this podcast the proper Viking burial it deserves.
If something tickles your fancy and gets your creative juices flowing, we're writing you a forever permission slip to make that thing that's been knocking at your door. It's your turn to take a spark and fan it into a flame.
You gotta doodle it. You got a strawberry cream cheese strudel it. You got to get your grooming license and fully standard poodle it.
You got to take it
and make it.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, Brad.
Bye, Brad. Bye.
Stickers for everyone.
Stickers for everyone.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark file. Could be something that I wanna make or how I wanna be. I pump it in my spark file. I jump into my spark file. Let's open up the spark file.